Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your computer and your computer software with Peter Green of InfoStar, who visits with us monthly to help with your personal computer problems and mine too. If I had a personal computer, I have Macs.
You've got at least more than one.
Yeah, I've got. Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I do. And I once in a while have some problems with the Macs too. They're not perfect.
No.
Almost, but not quite. So how are you doing, Pete?
Always great to be back, Larry.
And I'm telling you, the amount of shopping that's going on online is unbelievable, isn't it?
Cyber Monday? You know, the government keeps talking about changing how the tech stuff will affect, you know, online purchases. So I think people are just trying to get it in before that stuff changes, other than the holidays.
$6 billion over the weekend.
Yeah, it's, you know, the online shopping experience. You basically do your research online, you know, and find other opinions, experiences of other users. A lot of the online shopping sites have their own user review feedback that you can tap into, which makes it great for, you know, buying whatever you're looking at. And then, you know, pulling the trigger, you could either just keep adding to your basket and do it over a period of time, as long as you don't, clear out your security settings on your browser. Your shopping cart will stay intact, and you come back the next day or the next day or the next week and say, okay, I'm ready, and purchase.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, makes it very easy. I do it all the time.
And, of course, the topic every month is that we deal with is getting help with computer issues. But I know this month you're also coming at it a little different way. You've been thinking about the ways we use our computers to get help with other things.
Well, you know, you get so much information thrown at you from all aspects of life, you know, from taking a vacation to fixing your car to, medical issues. And, you know, to think that you're the only one out there that has the problem or, you know, seeking a solution. I read the web like a book, looking for the answer. And, you know, you go to a bookstore and you look at books on a variety of subjects. And, you know, the world's a dynamic place. And people are continually putting their feedback online. And I always say, you know, try to figure out how to ask that question better. And how do you figure that out, no matter what you're looking for? And you have to read all the answers, because if you're not getting the answer, and sometimes it's taken me 1 or 2 years to actually find what I felt was a good answer to my question, is to read the answers that you get back that don't answer the question. And understand why you're not asking the question the right way.
Look at
the bad answers and figure out, okay, why am I not getting the search results? Is it not out there, or is it I'm just not asking the question the right way? So get better at asking the question through looking at the answers, whether they're right or wrong, and then eventually that leads you to the solution. So whether it's looking at things that I've done, how to paint a car, planning a trip overseas, you know, where people say, oh, you really should get somebody to help you do that versus booking it yourself. And then you go online and, you know, you read the reviews, the feedbacks and travel discussions and then make your own decision whether or not you still need help or you can do it yourself.
Pete, we have every line full, so let's go to the phones and see what's up. And we also have quite a few on our Facebook page, so we'll go to the phones first, though. And Brad in Plover. Brad, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. Yep, my computer conked out a couple days ago. I was using it, and then all of a sudden I just got black and white vertical lines going down the screen, totally locked up. I shut it down, started up the next day. It ran for half an hour, but then locked up again. And now when I start it up, the fan will come on for a couple seconds and then shut off, and the light on the DVD door stays lit, as well as the power light, but nothing boots. I see nothing on the screen. No operating system comes up, not even the BIOS. So I'm wondering, I did drop a heavy piece of silverware on it 2 days before that happened, right over the CPU, but it worked that night. I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
Is it a desktop or a laptop?
Laptop.
Laptop. It sounds to me like potentially a power supply issue. You said you heard the fan come on and then it doesn't come on?
Yep, it comes on for a couple of seconds after I hit power, and then the fan cuts out and it's dead totally.
Yeah. It's a lot harder working on laptops for spare parts than it is for desktops, but the hard drive can easily come out of the laptop, the more recent ones versus real old ones where you had to remove the keyboard to get access to the hard drive.
I reset that, reinstalled it.
When you say reinstalled it?
Oh, I removed it from the laptop and then reseated it. I also put it in my enclosure and hooked it up to a different laptop.
So it works?
Yep, I can access everything.
Yeah. The best solution I would say is probably to if it's a name brand system, you could probably find it. You know, a local store might be able to take a quick look at it and see if, circuit wise, it's just a power supply issue. One other thing I might do is I would probably remove the battery and see if it powers up without the battery. Maybe there's some interference with all of a sudden the battery may be the culprit.
Yeah.
So that's the only other thing in between powering up your system is the battery.
Yeah.
So
give that a try.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you for calling, Brad. Appreciate it.
At least he was able to get his hard drive out and test it and make sure that works.
David and Phelps, we're on to you now. Hi, David.
Hi. I've been a long-time PC user, and I recently bought an iMac with Lion 10, and I got a few questions on that iMac. I understand I probably don't need to defrag it.
Correct.
I understand I probably don't have to have virus protection. Is that so?
I don't have any on mine. I don't know if Larry...
No.
Yeah.
No, I had it.
It hasn't really been an issue.
I had it,
and
then I
issue.
Took it off because it was getting in the way.
Yeah.
It
really hasn't been an issue on a Mac environment.
Okay.
Not to say that tomorrow the world could change, because it can, but not an issue at the current time.
Well, I'll keep my ears open to see if things change. The other question is, I got a wireless keypad with it, and... my wife likes the numeric pad. Is there a wireless compatible pad with numeric pad that is not a Mac? Mac is kind of expensive.
I would look at Targus and Kensington and Logitech as alternative solutions.
There's three right there.
Yeah.
Okay. And Kensington, then, Logitech, and Targus.
Yep.
Yep.
And then, the other option is... I use eBay for window shopping to see what's out there. Because sometimes you can find things there that you can't find at other places.
Okay.
So just doing a general search on eBay might come up with a whole bunch of options for you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Good luck. Have fun.
Appreciate the call. On our Facebook page, Gina sent a note. What's the best way to restore computer to factory settings? When you want to sell, you got a laptop you want to sell, how do you restore it to the factory?
Well, typically they either come with a CD/DVD that you can do that with, and they have instructions, and so you end up booting up off of that, and then it wipes out the drive completely and reinstalls whatever came with the computer. If you don't have that, some of the manufacturers make it available for download. And then the other thing is, if you haven't redone your system, a lot of times they come with that information and it's on the system, and they have instructions how to actually burn a disk to, so that you have that. So if you if you've gotten a laptop or a desktop system that doesn't have any disks with it other than maybe the operating system, they may have instructions on, you know, like in the startup guide into how burning, you know, you should be burning your own disks for the reference material or CDs, and in this case, how to restore it to factory settings. What's interesting about that question, you know, setting it up for selling, but how about restoring or reconditioning a system? That can bring up a can of worms. And the reason I bring that up is because let's say you've got a computer that's 5 years old and you've gone through and you've updated it and maintained it all throughout all those years. And now all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you decide to redo it. You've got to reinstall all those updates and all the updates to the operating system, all the updates to the driver. So, sometimes if they're not done in the right order, the computer starts acting kind of can act a little weird, and in some cases it can cause it to just not behave, you know, right?
Right.
So that can get frustrating. So I'm just putting it out there that, you know, if you're going to redo a system, you've got to be prepared for all those operating system updates, especially in a Windows environment, because they just love throwing that stuff at you. And then device driver updates, wireless adapters, wired adapters, video, you know, list goes on and on. So just, you know, if you're going to redo a system and you want to make it available for someone to use in your family, you know, do them a favor and make sure you get all the all the latest settings on your computer so they know what they have to go, you know, what their goal is.
Edie in Marshfield, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I need help. I bought a laptop for my daughter last year, a Toshiba laptop, and she forgot to bend the disk for restore. And she forgot the password. How does she get in?
Is it a Windows XP?
No, Windows 7.
Windows 7. So she needs the password to get into the just to use the system.
Yes.
There are some utilities out there. You have to go looking for them. I've got them listed. If you go to Infostar.com.
Infostar.com.
Yeah, Infostar.com. The left-hand side of the page says Virus Info Center. You click on that page. And then if you go to, probably in the middle, it says Emergency Utilities.
Emergency Utilities. Okay, got it.
There are Emergency Utilities, and you'll have to do this from obviously from a different system where you have access to the, you know, the internet for downloading and so forth. But you'll see some references to EBCD and UBCD. If you go through all those links, the one of them is probably going to have access to burning a Windows 7 utility to allow you to reboot the system and reset the password.
Hmm. There you go. Good luck.
So that's kind of breaking into the most secure operating system in the world, but that's how you do it.
That's how you do it. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar, our guest, as we talk about dealing with your personal computers. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Great to have you listening in. And the number to call, every line's filled right now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. Speaking of that page, Mike sent something on our Facebook page. Computer synchronization. Explain what, how, when, etc.
Computer synchronization. That's you know, that could be something where you're just hooking up your smartphone and synchronizing your data for updating your contacts, backing up your files synchronizing. I would say the biggest, most important thing in terms of synchronizing your computer to any device is knowing exactly what it's doing. You know, where are those files located, and what content is in those files? Because the worst part of the surprise is thinking that you were synchronized, but you didn't know what was being synchronized, and then missing out on what really should have been saved but wasn't saved. So synchronization is different things to different people, but I would say in general, it's really, you know, the devices that hook up to the computer, generally they're synchronized when they're attached, and let it go through the process, because you never know when that last synchronization might be, you know, something that you really need.
Makes sense. Let's go to an email from Carrie. I hope you can help with a problem. She's had about 2 months. Dell laptop uses Windows 7. Excuse me. Every time I turn my computer on, after about a minute or two, I get a message popping up in the lower left-hand corner, which supposedly is from Dell, telling me about an update. However, when I click right or left on any part of the box, nothing happens. Also, the written part of the message is cut off at the bottom of the box. The only way to get rid of it is to do an Alt F4. A little bug in there?
Yeah, it could be. I would probably go into put in msconfig, you know, click on start and then fill in msconfig and hit enter. Go into the startup tab, and there's probably a checkbox that's checked that is looking for updates from Dell. And there's probably something amiss, and if you uncheck that box, then they won't be bugging you anymore.
All right. Well, then, Phil in McHenry, Illinois.
The other thing is, just to be safe, is I would go to Dell's website, and you can plug in your service tag, or you could do a search through support on, you know, the model of your computer, and just look at the updates to the different files. Maybe there's something that needs to be updated.
Phil, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Peter and Larry, happy holidays to you guys.
You too.
You as well.
Peter, I maintain a website for a small business operator. I've always used Homestead's through Intuit, their Homestead site. I get a domain name. I get a lot of support and all kinds of nice design features for about $25 a month. And I ran it by my local clone of Bill Gates. And he said you're getting about a $2,000 program and you're paying $20-25 a month for it. If you're happy with it, why change? I like it. I want to know if you'd recommend any other this is a website design program. Takes me from a blank sheet of paper to something I can post, and then they let me publish and all that kind of good stuff. Have I got any other choices? I like this. I want to know if there's anything else I should be looking at.
From a cost standpoint, That's pretty reasonable to have all those features. It would probably take some exploring. You know, the cost of registering a domain is roughly $15 a year. Web hosting, you know, that's a big number spread. You can pay anywhere from free, and you're allowing people to just, you know, post some banners maybe on your site, and you have limited space and limited traffic, to maybe, you know, $5-$10 a month for decent speed, decent traffic, unlimited emails, to, you know, what software are you going to use for, you know, designing your web pages. There's a value to being familiar with what you have in front of you. You know, $25-$30 a month is, you know, let's say roughly $300 a year. The cost of software to do the design, there are free ones out there, and then there are pay for ones. You've got a learning curve to get up to speed to see if it does what you want it to do versus what you have, versus, you know, paying somebody to do web design work for you, which can run, you know, quite a range in price there too.
Big range.
You know, probably anywhere from someone starting out and charging $10 an hour to, you know, $150-$200 for crazy programming and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, you know, I wouldn't say jump the ship, but, you know, it depends on the kind of features you're looking for in a website. And if what you have is doing what you need, then there's probably not a lot of incentive to change. But if you need more features, then you have to look into what's out there to give you those features, whether it's a program that interacts with your website to allow you to do more database work or catalog publishing, to you know, purchasing raw data from some, you know, supplier that may cost, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $50,000 just for the data to allow you to push it to a website where you need, you know, dedicated storage and speed and bandwidth and then backing it up and security issues and, you know, a whole bunch of other things that, you know, we could go into at least a whole show to just talk about. So my answer is, you know, unless there's a pressing need to make a change and it doesn't sound like you're paying a huge amount of money, as long as it's doing what you want, then I think you're probably in a good place.
Jack in La Crosse, we're on to you. Hi, Jack. Thank you very much for calling.
Oh, thank you. I wonder if there is a way to erase old data, or particularly internet stuff that's been on there, probably staying on the back of the computer. But I deleted originally, but that I understand it just sits in the computer forever. Because there's a way to get rid of that.
There's a program, a utility we've talked about called CCleaner. Yep. And it's a free program from Piriforms. And if you just do a general search on C and then cleaner, you'll find it out there. And, that deletes a lot of your files that you're looking at doing some, housekeeping on.
Right.
So whether or not using Internet Explorer or Firefox, Google Chrome, it'll go out there. It'll delete all your temporary Internet files. It even has flexibility in terms of the settings for what you might want to keep and what you want to get rid of.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Clyde in Denmark, Wisconsin. We are on to you. Hi, Clyde.
Good morning. First of all, I'm not much of a computer expert, although I do use the computer about 3 hours a day, mostly to enter sweepstakes and to do email. I have a HP laptop. It's about 5 years old, and it's got Windows XP on it. I've been having a fight with Windows Internet Explorer, and it's been getting worse and worse the last couple months. It'll refuse to enter some sites that previously it had no problem entering completing what I wanted to do. It'll freeze up about once an hour at least, and then sometimes I have to go as far as do a hard shutdown on the computer to get it to do something again. It'll freeze up, and then it'll send us an error report. So I do that every time, and that doesn't do any good because I never change anything. And I did put that Avast program on, which you recommended a couple months ago, and for antivirus. That seems to slow down the computer a little bit. And I have done that CCleaner thing, and I've defragged and those kind of things, but I just don't know why Windows Internet Explorer should be helping me out, and it's making life miserable.
Mm. Do you have any other browsers on your system?
A friend of mine suggested that I try Firefox, and so I put that on just about a week ago. problem with that is there seems to be no way to transfer my favorites list from the Internet Explorer over to Firefox, so it really is not real useful. I'd have to reconstruct my whole favorites list.
Actually, there is. If you go into Internet Explorer when you launch it, if you do an export, off of one of the pull down menus, you can export out your favorites so that you know where the file is located.
Where would that be located on the screen?
Usually it's along the top. If you go into your favorites, you should be able to. There should be a link there for doing exporting. There's so many different versions of Internet Explorer that they move things around. But if you go through their menu choices, you just got to pry under the hood a little. You'll see where it says to export, and as long as you export it to where you know where it is. When you launch Firefox, you can tell it you want it to import those favorites and point it to where that file is located, and then it'll pull it in and put it into the Firefox system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another browser to use is Chrome. I know from experience Internet Explorer can be kind of a tug of war. One option would be to uninstall it and reinstall it. And again, that's where it would be a good thing to go in and save or export out your favorites so that you have them and you know where the file is. And you can also back up that file, too. It's a simple web page because that's how they do that, and that's how it's used. It's just a simple web page with a whole bunch of hyperlinks in it to the different websites. So you might want to uninstall it and then go to Microsoft site and do a search for the Internet Explorer website and download their latest version and
go from there
for your operating system and reinstall it and see how that helps. Sometimes the updates that they send to you for updating the browser cause it to actually not work correctly.
Good luck, Clyde. Thank you very much for calling. And by the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment for us. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a comment or a question there. Facebook question from Peggy. We had an error message telling her she needs to update her drivers. Every avenue I've taken brings me to websites where I need to pay to have the drivers updated. Can I do this somewhere else for free, or should I just pay the $39.95, have the program help me through it?
I've never paid for device driver, and all those sites that try to get you to do that are overcharging you for something that you have access to for free. Number one is to try and figure out what you have on your system, versions of, the software, the device drivers, and everything that's connected to it. There's a product called Belarc Advisor, BelArc Advisor. You can do a search on that, download it. That's a free program. And then Piriforms puts out, I think it's called SPECCY. Is their program that you can download and run it and tells you everything you ever wanted to know and more about what your computer's all about. So that'll tell you what you have in your system, and then or you can go into your control panel and look at your device manager and go into it piece by piece, which would probably take longer than just downloading those other programs and running them. And then you can also go to the manufacturer of your computer site. Now, if it's a custom-built system, you're not going to have everything put in a nice, orderly fashion. But if you have something like a Dell or an HP, they've got their site set up based on the models, and they have the info pages on all the different models, and your system would be up there, and it would basically list what's in your computer and then the updates – the latest updates for each of the different components. And if you've bought something and added to your system, then you should go to that manufacturer's site and look up that product.
Absolutely. Arlie in Madison, we are on to you. Thank you for calling. Hello. We got him there? Not hearing anything. Must have lost him. Let's go to Nancy in Waupesha, Minnesota. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question regarding my SD card from my camera. I put it into my computer and my printer recently, and they both said card error. So over Thanksgiving, my son put it into his computer and his printer, had no problem at all, and was able to print out pictures.
Okay.
The only thing that has changed since the last time I used the card in my printer or computer is that on my camera, I deleted a bunch of pictures from the card that I had already downloaded into my computer.
Well, that shouldn't have made any difference. But
no, sometimes I've had problems with memory cards, and they start acting a little weird. And it's even more frustrating when they start acting weird in the camera. So the ability to format the card is typically in the camera, and that's what I usually do because that's where, you know, you're taking the pictures. So you may want to try, and you know, if you've gotten the pictures off of the card, is to use the camera to reformat the card. And then see if that helps.
Oh.
Are you using like an external reader to, you know, well, actually your printer probably has its own card reader, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I would probably do the approach of reformatting the card in the camera.
And I'll have to look at the directions for the camera to see how to do that.
Yeah, it's right. Usually, it's, you know, you go into the menu and then you have to kind of search and search for the option to do it, but I know it does exist.
Okay, now there is a little white lock slide on the side of the SD card. Do I keep that unlocked or unlocked?
Yeah, you keep that unlocked. Locked, it means it's protected, so you can't do that stuff. You can't reformat it.
Okay.
I don't even know if it's locked, if you can actually save pictures to it.
No.
Probably not.
I don't think
okay,
so.
Okay, well, they're saved in the camera.
Yeah. there you go. Good luck, Nancy. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. All right, all kinds of interesting
things. I haven't tested that, but I'm guessing, if I was going to guess, I would definitely say a locked card is not going to allow you to take pictures to
it. Yeah. Jack in Facebook says, I have a 2-year-old compact computer running Windows Vista. Lately noticed something was taking 100% of my CPU capacity for the first hour I turn on the computer or in the morning. So I opened the Windows Task Manager and found that there was a semantic process going on that was hogging 95% of the CPU capacity.
Wow.
Yes, I'd had Norton antivirus active for the first year I owned the computer, but did not renew the subscription. But of course, Norton Semantic still had their software on my hard drive. What were they doing? What was Semantic doing with my processor? I have since deleted the program from my hard drive.
They were probably spinning your wheels, making you frustrated, so you'd probably renew it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be doubted a bit.
Yeah. Usually when I have to remove that program, I put the computer in a safe mode because it's got so many things that it's trying to hook into that when you put it in the safe mode, it kind of shuts it down from doing what it thinks it needs to be doing.
Let's see. We have...
You know, the other thing is when you remove a program, I use CCleaner to clean the registry.
Yeah.
Because it... what happens is when you have programs that you've removed from your system, there seem to be these loose DLL files hanging that aren't really associated with anything that's on your computer, and they just seem to operate computer time just trying to figure out how to deal with them. And once you get rid of them, it helps speed up the computer.
Mary in Belleville, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two questions about email. Our email is slowly disappearing. For several months ago, it would download, we have Windows XP home version, and we have, I use Outlook Express for the email. Anyway, a few months ago, it started delivering only 3 emails at a time. Then it would, go down, you'd have to reactivate it again every time. Then it was 2 emails, now it's 1 email. Well, that's very tedious because we're on dial-up. And I don't know whether I called our internet provider and they said, no, it's not our problem, it's a Windows problem. Well, of course, I didn't know what to do about that.
So you're saying that basically you can download 1 to 3 emails and then it just stops?
Only 1 email now.
And it stops?
Yes. It disconnects and you have to reconnect. Imagine.
Is there one that it seems like it's stuck on, or does it just keep advancing?
No, this is true anytime I go to email.
Huh.
It'll download one and then it'll just disconnect, and then I have to reconnect and wait for all the processes, which with our computer on dial-up is very slow.
Very slow.
And then we get one more, and they're usually ads or political things, so mm-hmm. I spend my day up there doing nothing.
And you've talked to your internet provider, and they the settings that you're using are the correct ones for Outlook? Did they?
They
review?
Didn't even ask me to check those. They just said it's not our problem.
You may want to see if they have a web page posted with the settings that you're supposed to be using. Because there may be something that's triggering your disconnect.
Could I talk to a tech about that? Because we're on dial-up, going to the internet for any web pages is torturous.
Mm-hmm.
Could I call a tech person and ask them to give me the correct settings?
Sure. Yeah, okay. You should be able to.
Okay, correct settings.
Yeah.
First thing to check.
Yeah.
What kind of speed are you using for dial-up?
It says 26, but it actually operates in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
The highest we ever get is 19. Lowest is 13. 14.
What area are you calling from?
I'm calling from the country about 4 miles out of Belleville.
Okay.
And we can't get anything but dial-up.
Do you have the internet service out there? I mean, for cell phones?
It doesn't work inside our house. You have to stand in the driveway for most cell phones.
Really?
Mm.
Wow, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I would just try to make sure that your connections or your settings right. The only other thing I could recommend maybe trying is Microsoft puts out a product called Live Mail, and maybe downloading Live Mail to work on your system and setting it up and seeing if it behaves better.
Yeah, that'd be worth a try anyway.
But Outlook Express is native to your operating system. But, you know, in terms of an alternative, you know, that would be, it might be worth trying.
Yeah, give it a shot. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have lots of callers online. Our guest today, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, answering the phones with her usual friendly voice. And I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Delving into your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Great to have you listening in today. Larry Mueller here. Lots of callers online, and we've got some email questions and some Facebook questions. Facebook, just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. For email, it's talk@wpr.org. By phone, it's 1-800-642-1234. And Carl in Madison, we are turning to you next. Hi, Carl. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, Larry. I have a relatively new, less than a year old, Toshiba laptop.
Okay.
And I was really pleased with it until recently. I keep getting, instead of going to MSN, when I click on, try to get on through the different websites, I get to Google, and I've never even heard of that. I've heard of Google, but I haven't heard of this full screen on Google as opposed to Internet Explorer. And I don't know how to get back to where I was before this happened. Any ideas?
Yeah, you can actually, if you're using Internet Explorer, you can go into... you'll have to find it on their menu, but it's Internet Options, and then you can change... If you change the website to MSN, if that's what you want, for your homepage, so change it to that, and then go to Internet Options, and then you'll see an area that says for your current page or your homepage, you can make it the current page your homepage. And that'll change that address. Probably what happened is somehow you interacted with, I'm just guessing, taking an educated guess, that somehow you either interacted or downloaded something that was with Google and asked if you wanted to make it your homepage, and you may have accidentally clicked on it, yes, and then Google became the default homepage on your system. The other trick that you can do is you can open up multiple tabs, and if you look at to the very right of your homepage when you launch Internet Explorer, you'll see kind of like a little baby tab, and you can click on that, and then you can put in a web address, or you could put in Google and do a search and find whatever, you know, you can put in anything you want. And you can keep doing that, and you may want to put maybe 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 tabs, depending upon your internet speed. If you have dial-in, it takes longer.
No,
if
I have no idea. So.
If you have broadband, you know, it'll work fine. Yeah. But you can actually have multiple startup pages. So all those tabs will actually launch when you open up your browser. And then you just click on each tab to switch between them. So you're not locked into just really one start page or home page, but you can have multiple.
Mm-hmm.
How do I start again to get to this point, to get to start the...
I would change the Google page that you said was coming up that you didn't want to be your start page.
Right.
But make sure that that's your, MSN. And then it's going to be under Internet Options. So you need to look in your menu portion of Internet Explorer to click on it, and you'll see something that says Internet Options, and right there at the top, it'll reference your current page, and if you click on that to make it the current page your current home page, and then apply it, that'll then restart your browser after you get out. That it'll come back up the way you want it.
I don't see anything to click on to get to that point, so.
You have to look around, and sometimes it's under File on the browser at the very top, across the top of the screen.
Uh-huh.
You have to look for it, but there's a feature that says Tools and Internet Options. Those are the key things to look for.
Well, something's got to be up there.
Yeah, Google and the search box and web images, videos, maps.
Do you have help? Do you see anywhere where it says help?
No. It's just a big Google page.
Sounds like you might have a full screen. I don't remember what the option is to change it from full screen setting to if you go around the perimeter of your browser screen, there might be some arrows to click on that will expose or open up to changes that you can make.
That's the problem, I think.
Yeah,
he's got it on.
Yeah, there's if you look around the perimeter of the top part of your screen or where your where you. The very top, there's usually going to be some bars, and there might be some very small triangles or sideway arrows that you need to click on.
Yeah, I'm to a help page now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to hunt around and look for one that lists tools or internet options, and then you'll find it.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate
your
call.
It'll be a little treasure hunt.
Yes. Fred in Minong, we are on to you. Hi, Fred.
Hi, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Hey. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I got a problem you can probably solve for me. I have XP and Internet Explorer, and not on a consistent basis, but relatively few times, but every week, and I'm on a computer a lot. I'm a senior citizen. It's part of my life nowadays, the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a situation where I might be on Fox News Net looking at a news clip, a film, a video clip, or I might even just be playing Boggle or an offline, you know, playing Boggle or some other solitaire program, and all of a sudden my computer will just reboot out of the blue for no apparent reason. It'll just reboot right from scratch. And then, of course, I got to go back in wherever I was again, but it'll just all of a sudden just reboot. And all I do is have my hand on the mouse, I'm playing this game, and boink, there it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really know what's causing it. I was told one time I have Trend Micro as a virus, and I think it's a pretty good virus protection. And I was told by somebody one time, I don't recall who it was, but they told me that turn your Trend Micro off, it might solve that problem. I haven't heard, I've talked to Trend Micro about it, and they're telling me that it shouldn't cause anything like that. Any suggestions?
Hmm. So you're saying it reboots out of the clear blue, just
this
all of a sudden?
Out of the clear blue. I'm playing the solitaire game, and I click on a card, and then bang, all of a sudden it just reboots. And it's not a particular card or anything like that. It's,
is there any duration of time that it's been on for? Does it happen? Sometimes it happens.
I've had it happen within the first 10 minutes after I turn it on, and sometimes I've had it on all day, and then all of a sudden it'll do it.
Mm.
And a lot of times I'll play the same games, you know, if I'm playing a game offline, and it won't do it at all. Maybe I'll go by 2 or 3 days, it won't happen. Then all of a sudden it'll happen, and it'll do it 2 or 3 times that day, maybe.
Okay. The first suggestion I would do, just to make sure, shut the computer down, and then I would just reseat all the connections on the computer,
mm-hmm.
so all the cables. Including even plugging into the outlet again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after doing that, if it continues to do it after that, the next thing I would probably look at doing would be updating the video driver on the computer to see if that helps. And then the next thing I would do is it seem to happen in just your browser or anything else that you're doing?
No, it could be happening. I'm not even online, and it'll do it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm online because any time I turn the computer on, naturally you're online when you have broadband. But I may be watching a video clip online, or I may be playing just a game that I got on my computer locally. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would probably download the latest video driver, install that, and see if that helps.
Okay, and then what do you think personally of the Trend Micro antivirus? Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I know it works fine. It doesn't sound like a virus issue to me or something that
it's too inconsistent. I would think if it was a virus, it'd be more consistent.
Yeah. The other thing is, sometimes I reseat the memory in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I suppose a lot of times corrosion does take place, and maybe something isn't making good contact.
So whether or not you choose to do it, or you have someone else do it, I would simply unplug the computer, open up the case, and I would probably reseat the video card, and if it is a separate video card, and then I would also reseat the memory.
Yeah, it's not part of the motherboard.
Yep.
It's a separate card.
So I would do those three things, and then if the problem continues, there's I would probably stop. I would stop at the three.
something to be more consistent you can work it.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your suggestions. I'll give it a shot.
Yep,
all
good
right.
Luck.
Good luck.
Yeah, nice holiday.
Yeah.
You too.
Happy holidays to you as well. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it's one of those...
Well, there's three good suggestions, so that's
yeah.
It's not going to happen in 5 minutes.
No, no. Well, three good suggestions, and if they, you know, one of them's bound to work.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, keep your fingers crossed.
Keep your fingers crossed. Oh, man, we're talking about computers today and software, and our guest, Peter Green of InfoStar Madison, he comes by once a month to help us with our personal computer problems. Glad to have him today, and I'm certainly happy that you're listening in. And he will be with us right up until 12:30 today. So stay with us here. We'll be back after a look at the news on the Ideas Network. Computers can be a tool or a toy, or sometimes both at the same time. However we use them, it's hard to keep up with the latest news, the latest product releases, latest developments. Maybe you feel like you're keeping up with those new developments. You don't need to worry about it. I, on the other hand, have the opposite problem. I have a hard time keeping up with them. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network. Peter Green of InfoStar is with us today until 12:30. He has some great advice, and he's ready to answer your computer questions and your hardware and software questions. So I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Can email us that address, talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there or even a photo. Like it, and we'll send you updates. Back after the news. If you're shopping online this holiday season, be sure to check out our website at wpr.org/shop to find out if your online purchases can benefit your favorite radio station. Go to WPR.org/shop to take a look. You might be surprised. You might be able to help us out. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, taking a look at your personal computer, and join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234. John in Richland Center has been waiting a long time, so let's go to John. Hi, John. Thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi. How can we help?
My wife and I bought a laptop a couple months ago, and we bought a wireless printer, fax machine, scanner. I don't know what all's on it. But they told us we needed a wireless router for it to make everything work. Well, we bought one of them. Now when you try to get this printer to work off the computer, print something off the computer, or I think she wants to put pictures from the computer, print them out, or print them and then put them in the computer. With her little hotspot she has, it won't work. It shuts the hotspot off, or for some reason they're not compatible. What do we do?
Okay. Okay. What's going on is the wireless router is basically the control point for identifying all the devices that are going to be in your wireless network, you know, in your house or in your location. So there's usually some kind of wizard or guide that steps you through to set up the router, but you have to be typically hardwired or networked from the computer to the router, and you put in a specific address. And they usually include instructions with the router how to do this. So you put in, you open up a web browser, so whether it's Internet Explorer or Firefox, whatever you're using, and you might put in like 192.168.1.0 or whatever address they have assigned that router. And you then log into the router with a username and a password, and it comes with factory defaults. So if you mess it up, you can always start over, because there's a reset button on the back of the router that you can push in with a paper clip or a sharp point and hold it down for, you know, 10, 30 seconds, and then it'll recycle and set everything back to factory settings. So if you mess things up, you can always go back and do this. But you have to log into that router and log into the wireless section, and you need to see how things are set up. And one of them is to assign an IP address to every device that logs into that router. And then the other part is being, if you want to call it, part of the same work group. In a Windows environment, being part of the same work group means that all of you see each other and you can share things between computers. But the main thing is understanding how that router is set up. And then from there, you're simply branching off with other devices hooking into it. Mm-hmm. So if it's a wireless printer, a wireless laptop, they're able to be identified as part of that network, and then they're allowed to communicate with each other.
There you go.
So that's the underlying secret or concept is how to, that you have to master that router and have it set up so that all the IP addresses are assigned by that router, and if the SSID is the identifying name of the wireless network that it's broadcasting, and if you click on a wireless network for your laptop, if you live in a neighborhood, you might see more than one, you know, another name other than the one that you assigned. And I typically tell people not to assign it something that names their house or their favorite pet, but more of something that's obscure, so that someone that's driving by can't really tell where that signal's coming from. And you can assign it security, and there are a number of different levels of security that you can set it up with too.
There you go. And Pete, we have a top 10 list of things that I really wanted to get to as well. Thanks again, John, by the way, for calling. And before we take another call, let's take a look. What have you got for us this month?
Well, if you go to Infostar.com and click on current, or go to the top 10 archives and then scroll down to today's date, they're all there. This first one is called frugaltravelguy.com. And if you want to figure out how to get more frequent flyer miles and all the different programs that cater to people that like doing that stuff, this guy just keeps up on it. I actually saw it. It was on one of the news broadcasts, and I was just amazed at how much travel he got out of it. And all these people that were into this, it's just amazing. Number two is called Crackle.com, C-R-A-C-K-L-E. And it's an entertainment portal with full-length movies, TV shows, and series, and it's for free. The next one is called iHeart.com. And it's for iHeartRadio. You have access to over 750 stations coast to coast as long as you have internet access. Number four is called Fundraiser, and it's fund, FUNDRAZR.com. And it tries to leverage social networking of the internet with a way of fundraising. So
cool. It
might be something useful for a lot of people. Number five is called numbers 5 through really 11. I have an 11 posted there. They were all kind of like different twists on, looking at fundraising for nonprofit organizations are out there, and also. Just take a look at them. It's good. The number five is called urban.org. And it's a institute that's mission is to gather data, research, and evaluate, and technical assistance to overseas and educate and overseas educates Americans on social and economic issues for effective government. Number six is AWF.org. It's an African Wildlife Foundation, and the mission is up there. Number seven is AmericanForest.org, and it's another nonprofit dealing with American forests. And there's even an ancient tree archive that's available to maintain that. Number eight is worldbicyclerelief.org. And they, to date, they have put out 93,000 bicycles that have changed almost 500,000 lives. Number nine is an interesting name, 1percentfortheplanet.org. And right now they have to date over 1,400 companies in 38 countries around the world that donate 1% of their sales to 2,700 environmental organizations. And number 10 is called waterforpeople.com. And the mission is to make drinking water available for everyone.
Yeah, so great.
All the missions are up there, and you can find them at infostar.com and click on current. And
there you go. There you go. And Helen and Prentice, it is your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hello, Larry. I was wondering, I have bought a new computer, and I'm kind of computer illiterate. And I tried to hook up my printer and my scanner to it, and it said they were too old. Is there a way that I could still make them work? I really like them.
The only way is, you can try and see if you can go to the website and download drivers for them.
Okay.
You have to go to each manufacturer and see if they make them available.
Well,
for...
my printer and my scanner are both Hewlett-Packard.
Okay.
And so is the so is the computer that I just bought.
Yeah.
But I had Windows 98 before, and now I've got 7.
Yeah, HP's got a real bug with some of this stuff, and I can tell you, you can get really frustrated with them. I've had products, and I just shake my head, and then I go online, and I research it, and what you may be able to do is do a little research online as related to the model of your printer, your scanner, any other devices that you have that you've liked using that still seem to work, at least with the old stuff. But go online, do some search, and put in Windows 7 and see, what people are commenting about them. Because I've had some cases where I just shake my head and go, why is this not working? Why have they not updated it? And, the device is not that old that they can't fail to support it, but they choose not to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which means that certain either it doesn't work or certain features of it don't work. And that can really be it can be annoying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. it's sort of like, well, you gotta go out and buy something new because they're just leaving you between a rock and a hard place.
Well, that's what my daughter says. Gee, Ma, you had this printer and scanner forever. They do, you got to update someday.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to. If these are working fine.
Right.
I hate
now,
filling
I can,
up the landfill now, with stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, how old is the printer that you're trying to update?
When Windows 98 came out, it was, I think, around 1999, probably.
Okay.
It's been
now,
a while.
All right. Now, I can tell you, okay, some like that I'd be willing to let go.
Oh, yeah?
And I'll tell you why. Some of the newer printers and multifunction devices that are out there, and even in one case, I recently purchased an HP multi-purpose printer scanner.
Fax machine, the whole thing. Uh-huh.
They gave me $50 for trading in my old printer, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll take this in and let you guys, do whatever you're going to do with it." But the print speed,
it's
just
a lot better.
Oh my God, it just blew it away. Okay, the scanner, phenomenal scanner, two-sided printing.
Oh,
I could put in a thumb drive, and if I needed to scan documents to it. Boy, was it, that's just a nice, awesome feature to be able to do that. So there are benefits to the upgrade, and it looks like the ink even lasts longer.
No, you might want to get on the Peter Green bandwagon here.
I'm just saying that, you get, it prints faster.
Okay.
It's more efficient with the ink. Okay. The scanning is quicker. You can scan black and white and color. You could save it to a thumb drive. You can do two-sided printing.
Jumps higher, dives deeper, yeah. Comes out drier.
So, you know, after 11 years,
okay,
they had to fix something.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to talk about bathroom switches and things like that, I can say that they haven't changed things in 25 years.
No. Well, I had just purchased ink for this printer just not even a month ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. So there's like almost $60-$70 worth of ink right there that I'm going to be throwing away too.
Well, you could donate it to a church, an organization, or a school, and see
uses those cartridges anymore.
But
they will.
But you know, at least that way you could write off the value of it.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for calling. Good luck. And Matt in Grandview, Wisconsin, we are on to you. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
I was curious about parental programs, thinking about buying one for my laptop. I was looking at NetNanny. I was just wondering your thoughts or opinions on that or other programs.
Mm-hmm. NetNanny's been around for a very long time. Probably what I would do is I would do a search on opinions of NetNanny and see if there are any discussions that include some other programs that might be worthy of looking at. The other thing that I would do to check in terms of looking for reviews or other options and see if there are other things that you may not have even considered would be to go to a website called cnet.com, C-N-E-T.
Okay.
CNET.com and do a search on NetNanny and look and see if they've come up with any other suggestions, because they typically have an editor's choice and they may point out some pluses or some flaws or maybe some other things to look at. And ZDNet.com is another one for Ziff Davis Publishing, and they do a lot of computer publications, and there might be a good suggestion out there too.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in Delafield, we are on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hello, guys. Windows keeps track of Wi-Fi access point information. Is there any way that can be disabled?
When you say Wi-Fi access information, what do you particularly...
Well, they can... Windows stores the access point passwords.
And...
Can that be disabled? I mean, if somebody hacks the computer, then... Mm-hmm. They can see where you've been and the passwords and so on and so forth.
There are ways to disable that. You'd have to go, I would probably do a search through Microsoft TechNet to see exactly where those changes could be made, but it's probably going to be through your control panel and administrative tools for your system.
Okay. That sounds like a good starting point.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Renee in Chippewa Falls, on to you. Hi, Renee.
Hi. When I start up my computer, I use Google Chrome, and my.yahoo.com is my homepage. And whenever I open it up, it says a little puzzle piece, and it says an additional plugin is required to display some elements on this page. And when I go to install plugin, it won't let me do it. But it shows up every single time, and I'm wondering what it is, what I did, what I can get, how do I get rid of it, what do I do?
Usually the plugin is referring to, it might be something like Java or Flash from Adobe. Those are the typical popular ones. So what I would probably do is I would probably, when you restart it, try and see if it can, you know, search for and find those add-ons. And if it can't, there's probably a question where it says to, check a box where don't ask me again.
Oh, okay. okay, I haven't seen that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just check that off and...
There you go.
Then it won't bother you anymore.
Yep. Good luck. We got an email from Kurt in Poinette. And Kurt says, our photo group is looking for a common online site where we can all access and update the layout of an upcoming gallery show. So, common site.
Boy, there's so many of them out there. Some things that come to mind, Snapfish.
Snapfish?
Yeah, I think is one for, you know, you can even, Google's even got some tools out there for, you know, for posting things and sharing. And their new social networking product that's out there, what is it called, Google Plus?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would probably be a good thing to use.
Be worth taking a look at it anyway,
yep.
For sure.
Yep.
Okay. And Jeff in Appleton, on to you. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Hi. What can we do for you? We got about 3 minutes.
I have an HP Pavilion with Windows XP. My Blu-ray player that I bought when they first came out is on the fritz. The firmware won't update anymore. And I'm wondering if instead of buying a new Blu-ray player, if I could buy the Blu-ray disk drive for the computer and then an HDMI sound card or some way to hook it to my receiver to play it through my TV, because that's how I use the computer on my TV. And
so you want to replace the DVD drive on your HP computer and use that as a Blu-ray player. Boy, you probably could, and I would probably research the one that you would be using for putting into your desktop to make sure that it's compatible with XP before you pull the trigger on it. You know, CNET.com might be a good place to look for that. But I can also tell you the cost of Blu-ray players has really come down a lot.
Yeah.
And I've seen them for under $100, and I think even the 3D ones are, you know, between $100 and $150. So, you know, the cost of a Blu-ray player, adding it and going through the trouble of putting it in that, you know, desktop might be more than it's worth.
Okay.
So
yeah, because I was also looking at the game units have the Blu-ray and Netflix you can hook to your TV too.
Right.
So, yep, it's all about price and getting the best setups.
Yeah, so you got a few options to look at and think about.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Are you a Wii guy? Do you like fooling around with Wii?
You know, I've played video games since the days of Pong and Tank.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember when Pong was on the Wang computer here at the university.
Yeah.
And I figured out how to just set that paddle so I could beat the computer 21-0.
You can dance and bowl and
I'm going to get something, but I haven't decided what. But my kids have been through all of them. And to this day, my son and his buddies, you know what they love playing? N64. And someone was getting on their case, like, you know, because their paddles are harder to come by, and they're like, you guys got to upgrade to something better. And they all have the better. But they all still migrate to that N64, and they've got a few favorites. And
Geeky guys. Well, I still like them. And actually, the dancing ones are a lot of. And you really work up a sweat. I mean, they're good exercise.
I got, Larry, I actually used the pads that were worn out. They had that heavy-duty foam in them.
Because
my kids got those dance pads.
Yeah.
So I actually used those in my workshop. for easing the strain on my feet when I stand there.
Pete, it's
That's
always...
recycling.
Oh, happy holidays. Always a pleasure. Yep. You'll be back in a month. We'll do this all over again.
Yep, happy holidays, everybody.
Peter Green of InfoStar. Take a look at his website where you get that top 10 list right there. Tomorrow, take a look at prostate cancer research. Stay with us.